Okay, so thank you everyone for coming. Everyone can hear me? Yeah? Okay. So, last week, for those who are not here, Rabbi Turchiner surveyed how you look for questions in the Parsha, or if you're talking about a holiday, or whatever the case may be, different models. Today what I want to do is I'm going to try to model the an actual Dvar Torah to try to get an idea of how you take those ideas and turn them into a presentable Dvar Torah. I tried to just pick a very simple Dvar Torah from the Parsha so we can follow it and try to see the way that a Dvar Torah develops. The first thing you have to do when you're giving a Dvar Torah is you have to catch the attention of the people in the crowd. For some people, right, Turchiner's written up an outline, right, Friedman's written up an outline, they're circulating around, we'll send them out afterwards. But the first thing you have to do is catch people's attention. When I was taking a Dvar Torah presentation course with Rabbi J.J. Schachter, he noted, you usually have approximately 2 seconds to get the attention of the people in the crowd, especially in shul, because, well, you have 2 seconds before people decide whether they're going to go to sleep or they're going to read something that's sitting on their shelf, in their talis bag, whatever the case may be, and once you've lost them, you've lost them. So you have 2 seconds. And sometimes that means starting with a story, a joke, if you have a good joke, or to be fair, if you're a rabbi, a bad joke is fine also. I don't encourage it, but you can do that. But the first thing to do is to grab attention. If you don't want to start that way, so there are certain things you can do that will strengthen the beginning of your Dvar Torah. So for example, Rabbi Schachter noted that if you start the Dvar Torah in this week's Parsha, you've already violated the 2-second rule, because by that point you've lost everybody's attention, and even if the Dvar Torah is great, you're already done. Even if you don't want to start with a headline joke or story, you can instead start with the pasuk you're talking about and say it with emphasis. That already starts you off stronger, right? And if instead of saying, in this week's Parsha we see, you say, right, in this week, if you start this week's Parsha, and Yaakov saw angels going up and down, if it's an interesting part of the Parsha, people already know what you're about to talk about, that is already a stronger start to a Dvar Torah. Then in this week's Parsha, we know that Yaakov Avinu had a dream in which he saw angels going up and down a ladder, right? By the time you've gotten to that, you've lost people. If you just start with the emphatic pasuk, everyone knows you're talking about the Parsha once you do that. But that gives you that hook, so you already have people starting off. So that's the first thing you need to do in every Dvar Torah. Then for the body of the Dvar Torah, there are 3 things you have to do. You have to present the problem, you've got to present the answer, and then you've got to offer the takeaway. Don't assume the takeaway is understood, is self-evident, and even if it is self-evident, it's a good way of closing, of wrapping up. Right? If you remember when you were in like 3rd and 4th grade and you were learning the 5-paragraph essay, tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them what you've told them. Right, Dvar Torah is the same way, and in that end, you want to push them, you want to give them the takeaway. Sometimes the takeaway is a prepackaged lesson, sometimes it's a challenge for them to think about it and figure out how to put it in their own life. That's always a stronger type of Dvar Torah, because you're engaging the audience. But whatever you do, that is your goal for the body of the Dvar Torah. Present the question, present the answer, and present the takeaway. So, for example, this week's Parsha, right? Never start that way, right? Good. Yaakov has a dream, and he sees the angels going up and going down. We all know the famous rosy picture of Rashi, that the angels are coming to escort Yaakov. There are angels who belong to the land of Israel. There are angels which belong to the diaspora. As he's leaving, the angels who have escorted him from his father's house to this point have been with him. And now, as he comes to the border, so they need a switch, and he's going to have angels coming down to escort him as he leaves. It's a beautiful picture. Yaakov is always taken care of by his divine entourage. But there is a more cynical, a little bit scarier version that appears in the Gemara, where the Gemara says that the angels that were going up and down, they went up to look at something, and they came down to see Yaakov, and they wanted to harm him. And God hovered over him and protected him. Okay? So, if we now step out of the Dvar Torah and analyze what I'm doing, right, here I've chosen to take a very simple model of the Dvar Torah. Right? There are many different types of Divrei Torah you could do. Right? Some, if you have your Chiner's sheet, are the out-of-left-field Dvar Torah. Right? You start with something totally surprising, and you hope that the shock value grabs people, and then you use it to answer some local question about the Parsha. But if you want to take a straightforward Dvar Torah, a linear Dvar Torah, so present a question that emerges from the simple read of the Psukim, from a Midrash, whatever it is. The method I'm using here is that I take a Midrash that everybody knows, and a Midrash that people don't really know, which automatically creates tension, because we're used to feeling happy that Yaakov is escorted. And then you find out that there's another Midrashic tradition that the angels are coming to hurt Yaakov. So without using any stories, without using any jokes, right? Most people who've heard this Midrash, again, you have to it depends on audience. I'm assuming here most people have heard that Midrash. In some audiences, most people haven't heard the first Midrash. So the tension comes from presenting the problem. And I don't have the added advantage of creating a cognitive dissonance between what they grew up knowing and what the Gemara says. But either way, creating the tension is pretty obvious, because you have here two Midrashim, one which presents sort of a happy picture which we can all get behind, and then another one that says that there are angels who are trying to harm Yaakov because of something they saw up in heaven and something they saw in Yaakov. And that image is disturbing enough that it already should get most of the people thinking, why do the angels want to harm Yaakov? So that's the question stage, right? Try to set a very clear problem. Why would the angels want to hurt Yaakov? I understand why there might be angels who want to take care of our forefather, Yaakov, Jacob, as he leaves the land of Israel, but why would angels want to come and hurt him? Why does God have to protect him from these vindictive angels? Then you move to the next stage. Provide an answer. Now, you could do different things. You could present a panoply of answers. Right? You could say, well, the Ramban says this, and Rashi says this, and the Midrash says this, and Ibn Ezra says this. There are advantages and disadvantages to that model. One of the advantages is you give a fuller picture, you have the ability to talk about different types of ideas. The disadvantage is you might lose people, because you're talking about multiple ideas. You have to know your crowd. If you want, especially, let's say it's, I don't know, Sudat Shlishit, or it's a crowd with less background, or it's a more relaxed situation, and people don't want to be thinking too much, so take the other model of taking one source, presenting one answer, one idea. So that's what I'm going to do here. So, if you look in Rav David Tzvi Hoffman suggests as follows. The Midrash says that in heaven, at the top of the ladder, there is the Kisei HaKavod, there is the throne of God. On the throne of God, the Midrash says, is Dmut Yokno Shel Yaakov Avinu, is the image of Yaakov's face. Building on that, Rav David Tzvi Hoffman says, the angels went up to heaven, and they saw Yaakov's face. But not the face as it was in this world. The face of Yaakov as he could be. So the angels went up to heaven and said, who is this Yaakov supposed to be? But then they went and they did a comparison. And they said, well, does the Yaakov in heaven, the Yaakov that could be, match the Yaakov on earth? And what did they find? What was Yaakov doing in that moment? He was sleeping. And they said, Yaakov, you could be the Yaakov that's engraved on the throne of heaven, and here you are sleeping, doing nothing. So they wanted to hurt him. Because then, what right do you have to not live up to who you are supposed to be? So that's One answer, right? It's simple. This is a simple type of dvardara, right? Simple question. Why would the angels want to harm Yaakov? Simple answer. The angels saw his potential and saw his reality and were disturbed by the difference, and they wanted to hurt him because no one has the right to not live up to their responsibilities and their potential in this world. Right, so this is a simple model of a dvartara. Simple, easy to grasp question. Powerful, simple idea to answer the question, and then the takeaway. The advantage of this idea, right? I was looking for an idea that would model a simple model, like a simple type of dvartara, is the takeaway here. If you want to present the takeaway, it's easy, right? It's even Yaakov Avinu, right? Even our great patriarch, was found wanting when he wasn't striving for his potential, and the angels wanted to harm him, but God protected him. Because God recognized it's not so easy to live up to our potential, and He has mercy and is willing to give us time. But if He is giving us time, that only means that we have a little bit more time to do what we're supposed to do. But the responsibility is still on our shoulders. The onus is still on our shoulders to live up to that image that is up there in heaven of who we could be. So, Dvartara, grab people's attention, present a question, answer it, either with multiple answers, but if you want a simple one, one answer, and then articulate the takeaway. Once you've done that, right, close your dvartara, right? The dvartara can close with the takeaway lesson. If, as Rabbi Karofkin will talk about next week, it's a simcha, or it's the opposite, so then tie it into what you're talking about. If it's an event, right? You could hear someone giving this type of dvartara at a graduation, right? We see you for what you could be, make us proud, right? Whatever you want, right? You could see how this dvartara could go. But that is the basic model of a dvartara. Hook your crowd, make them understand the question. Simple. Present an answer, either multiple answers or an answer. If you want, push them farther, depending on how much time you have. If you want to challenge them, right. This would be a good point to tell them. Think about who you want to be. What do you think you look like on the throne in heaven? And what do you look like in reality? Right? What are you going to do to get yourself from point A to point B? And that's another thing you can do in Dvartara. And then takeaway lesson and close. And that's a very sort of simple model of a linear Dvartara, which people can follow. So as we write our Divrei Torah, again, you have different options. You can choose at the question stage to present more than one question that you're going to answer. Right? Sometimes that's a way of model, presenting multiple questions which you can answer with one answer. At the answer stage, you can choose to present multiple answers to derive multiple lessons. But still, the model is always going to be that simple model. Grab attention, present question, resolve question, present takeaway lesson, and close. So with that, like I said, there's a few of these handouts going around, right? Tertina produced one, Adam produced one. There's some other tips there. Other things you have to think about, obviously the mood of the Dvartara, right? If it's a graduation, it's going to be one mood. If it's a simcha, if it's a parsha Dvartara, if it's a eulogy, you have to think about the mood and tailor the lesson and the presentation as such. Right? Don't start a eulogy with a joke, obviously, right? There's certain things you've got to know. Right? Feel the mood when you present. Feel the background of the people to figure out whether it's better to have a one idea Dvartara or multiple, right? A linear one or not. Figure out whether you can be interactive. Again, depends on the audience, depends on the setting, but all those questions are simply, in the end of the day, going to play off that basic model of a Dvartara. So with that, we will send out all this material afterwards, but let us move to actually working on our Divrei Torah. Anyone who was here last week, stay with the group you were with. Anyone who was not here last week, so Rabbi Turchiner's group, I think it's what do you want to do?
We have a blend already here. We can take a couple more, but we can't take too many. Okay,
so you can split up as you want. Right, Turchiner is doing Hanukkah. Right, Friedman and I are doing Parsha in English, and Ray Peretz is doing Parsha in Hebrew. split up as you would like. Again, people who were last week, try to stick with your group. People who are not, find a group, and we will move to writing the Torah.